It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
Good evening and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years this evening and every Sunday evening, 5 p.m. Central Time, and that's 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And you can hear this program again by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com. That's drmarakarpel.com. And the link to the podcast, along with all of the information, website links, and all of that kind of stuff that we talk about on the program, will be posted later this evening or early tomorrow morning. And you can hear the podcast of this program as soon as 5 minutes after the show ends by going directly to blogtalkradio.com. That's blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And for information about previous shows and upcoming shows, again, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com, go to blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears, and follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. Want to contact me? Send me an email to Dr. Mara, D-R-M-A-R-A, at drmarakarpel.com, or go through my website or give me a call at 512-626-6973. This evening's program is produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by Dr. Ronald DeVere, neurologist, memory specialist, and author of the book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask. To make an appointment with Dr. DeVere in his memory clinic in Lakeway, Texas, or to purchase a copy of his book, you can call him at 512-261-7909 or send him an email to rdevere, that's R-D-E-V-E-R-E, at austin.rr.com. And his book is also available on Amazon. This evening's program is also sponsored by the Bra Lady, Sonia Das, helping every woman have a perky day. In Austin, call Sonia at 512-898-9058 or go to haveaperkyday.com. This evening's program is also sponsored by Storyhouse. Storyhouse gathers your stories and turns them into multimedia collections that can be shared now and for generations to come. Have Storyhouse over to conduct a private interview in your home or invite them to your next big event or family reunion. Storyhouse, where your memories live. Find out more at yourstoryhouse.com or call 512-296-8752. And today is Sunday, July the 10th, and we are back live in beautiful Austin, Texas. And I hope you're all staying cool wherever you are during these dog days of summer. It seems the heat is everywhere right now, so stay cool. This evening, just stay inside and listen to this show. There you go. This evening, Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment, producer of this program, is with us to do the production and engineering for the show, and he'll be answering your calls if you call later with questions for my guests. And so please feel free to give a call with your questions later on the show, and be sure to say hello to Art. And if this is the first time that you're tuning in, I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City practicing here in Austin, Texas, and in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and caregivers, and for the past few years have also been evaluating veterans for PTSD. And most recently, my office has been in the amazing Veterans Resource Center, Heroes Night Out, which is located in Cedar Park, Texas. And for information about this wonderful resource for veterans and for their families, you can check out their website at heroesnightout.com. All right, we have a great lineup for you this evening. First, in a few minutes, a regular to the show, national speaker on wellness, prevention of disease, and keeping the cancer switch off, and author of Fearless, My Journey That Healed Breast Cancer and My Life Through Faith, Food, and Fun, and also the book My Bodacious Healing Kitchen. Venus DeMarco will join us once again from Florida to talk about how we can stay healthy and prevent cancer with the food that we eat. And also joining us from right here in Central Texas, veteran First Sergeant Will Williams, a friend of this program and a winner of multiple awards for his service in the community, as well as his multiple medals during his military service. And he will join us this time to talk about how communities and police officers can develop good relationships to increase working together and decreasing violence. And this is obviously a really important and timely topic. And later in the program, filmmakers, Where is the Horse? Based in Quebec, but calling in from Monterrey, Mexico, will call in to talk about their filmmaking and how that takes them around the world. And I'm going to talk about how we can keep from becoming depressed even with all of the bad news in the media and on social media. So I think that's also a really timely and important topic. So we're going to talk about that. And throughout this evening's program, we will have time to take your questions. So if you have any questions for me or especially for my guests, please feel free to give a call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can email or tweet your questions to me while my guests are still on the air, and I will read the questions to my guests. And again, my email is drmara, D-R-M-A-R-A, @ drmarakarpel.com. And my Twitter address is M-A-R-A-E-K. All right, we're going to take a very quick break. Don't go anywhere, because after the break, Venus DeMarco is on the line and she'll be joining us. So we'll be right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel. We'll be back after words from our sponsors.
Worried about memory loss? Dr. Ronald DeVere, certified neurologist and director of Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders in Lakeway, has been helping those with dementia and memory loss for over 12 years, specializing in the diagnosis, treatment, and counseling of those with memory loss and dementia. Dr. DeVere also has a book to reduce your worry and fear by knowing the facts. Memory loss, everything you want to know but forget to ask, available now on Amazon.com. Dr. Ronald DeVere, Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders center in Lakeway, and his book, Memory Loss, everything you want to know but forget to ask. For more information or to schedule an appointment, call 512-261-7909.
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient. And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about essential body wear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com. And have a perky day. Gravity.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com.
And we're back. And if you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And now joining us once again from the Sunshine State, a regular of the show, national speaker on wellness, prevention of disease, and keeping the cancer switch off, as well as some amazing cookbook and her book, the memoirs, her journey that healed her from breast cancer. Dina DeMarco is here to talk about nutrition and preventing cancer and more. And Venus, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
All right. I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing really good. It's actually hot and humid.
It really? Really?
Really. I mean, surprise, you know, July in Florida. I can tell you why people leave in the summer and come back in the winter. But, you know, I'm loving it. I'm close to the ocean. I'm making a new life for myself. I'm meeting some really cool people.
Good for you.
And, it's really great. And
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, I'm actually really loving it. So, I mean, I miss Austin. I do miss my friends. But, you know, life goes on. Sometimes, you know, it's a little different direction than you thought you would take.
So, you know, maybe for the listeners who haven't heard you before on this program or don't know you, maybe you can give a little bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, I was an esthetician for 35 years, very successful in California, Seattle, Sun Valley, Idaho, and Austin. And in 2009, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And if you know me, I don't do anything small. So I had a 9-centimeter tumor with tumors rotating around it in my right breast. And everybody wanted me, and I knew it was there for a long time. When you have a tumor that large, you know it's there. But it took me probably 6 to 8 months to actually go in and have it checked out. And then everybody panicked over me and wanted me to have a double mastectomy and lots of chemo, and I said no. And in my book, I say I had 2 opinions, but in reality, I probably had 4. And, so I decided I had 2 major, you know, the big MD Anderson, a local cancer doctor in Austin, and the radiologist who panicked over me. So there's 3 right there, and then I went to a holistic doctor. So really, I had 4 people, but I decided to not go that route because it didn't make sense for me. Now,
the route of a double mastectomy and chemotherapy.
Yeah, and people say, well, didn't you have a lumpectomy? But I couldn't have a lumpectomy. That's way too much to just take a tumor out. So they'd really have to take the whole breast. And for me, and like I'm saying, this is for me, it didn't make sense to start to poison my body when my immune system was already whacked out. That's why I got sick. And I wanted to know why I got sick. Why did I get sick? Why was cancer now becoming an epidemic? And it wasn't, I was in perimenopause, and then, you know, usually breast cancer hits most people, you know, menopause or postmenopause. But I started to see that it was hitting people now in their 20s, 30s, and some young children and men. So to me, none of this made sense. But the doctors, I'm like, wait a minute, this used to be very few people, and now it's an epidemic, which will be a pandemic in 10 years if people don't get wise and start standing up for their food sources and get their stress levels down and watch their thoughts and change the way they eat. So I just decided that's what I was going to do, and here I am 8 years later. I got the girls. I get healthier all the time because it is a journey. You don't just get better overnight. Now, granted, I have seen people miraculously healed in a second, but we don't just get cancer. It is the perfect storm. And I started my blog series, and I haven't finished it yet. I do have part 1 up called Cancer, the Perfect Storm on venusdemarco.org. And I just had some things come up, but now I'll start to finish. That means it can go to 20 different parts if I want it to. But cancer is a perfect storm. takes a lot of things. It takes two or more factors to cause it, and it doesn't happen overnight. So we don't just get cancer. We don't just go and get a diagnosis. It's been there 10 or 20 years. It has to grow
right.
and improve, just like the perfect storm. So I
right, and we all have cancer cells inside of us, right, Tina?
Oh, yeah, of course, every day. Because the body, trillions of cells die a day so that the body can make new cells. The body's an amazing, amazing machine. It was made perfectly. But what happens is as our immune system gets compromised, the little T cells or killer cells cannot grab these cells that don't want to die off, and they start to mutate, and then they start taking over. This is why it's so important to keep our immune system very strong. And by the way, sleep is a big part of that. We need
what
to sleep.
What is that?
Sleep is a really big part of that. And the more I'm out talking to people, the more I realize it's not just about eating. People are not sleeping anymore, and they don't sleep good. They put their phones by their heads, and they have their electronics, and they go to sleep in front of the TV. So anyway, we do have these cancer cells, and they're running through our body every day, and they're supposed to die off. But when the immune system is compromised, and then you're feeding the fire with lots of sugar, these start to take over, and then eventually you have cancer because it now has, they've gone into the millions, and a tumor usually comes around and enrobes it. And, we don't change anything about our lives, and we think, well, we'll just cut it out, take some chemo, and it'll go away. But you know what? In reality, you never got to the root of the problem.
Right. Right. You didn't get to the cause. We hear about it all the time that people go through treatment and then they get cancer again, right?
Right, exactly. It's only 2.1% that don't after 5 years. That's a very small percentage.
That's a very small percentage.
And then what
that means
that
cause is still... So does that mean that the cause is still there brewing in the body ready to come out maybe in another spot?
And I believe the chemo enhances it, makes it come back stronger.
Because
I don't believe the chemo kills cancer cells. I believe it goes in and totally destroys the whole body. And cancer cells are strong little devils, so now they come back, they go and hide, and then they mutate and come back stronger. And so if you cut your breath off, you're not going to have breast cancer, but you might have it in your chest wall. You may get it in your lungs. You may get it in your stomach, your liver. I think that we spend so much time cutting out symptoms. You know, Dr. Moritz said, and as I go on this journey, the more, and I talk about this in my book, but the more I believe him, he said cancer is not a disease. It's a survival mechanism. It's a way of your body saying to you, I've had enough. I'm giving you one more chance. Will you change your life?
That's interesting.
I believe that more and more as I see people them not want to change their life. They don't want to forgive. They don't want to get rid of their anger and bitterness and change their lifestyle and still go 100 miles an hour and never have fun and not sleep at night because everybody has to work. You know, that's like a badge of honor. How many hours a day can we work? How many hours can we go without sleep? You know, and guess what? I got hit upside the breast. You can get hit upside the liver or it all depends. Your emotions have a lot to do with it. But, our food source... very, very important, and we have got to change the way America is eating.
So what do you recommend as a, in terms of diet in order to prevent the development of the cancer cells becoming an issue for us and turning into
what we call
cancer?
Well, Caroline Leaf always says, first it takes a spot to activate a gene, and then it takes two or more factors to mutate the gene. Or your DNA. So we have to look at how food affects our body. First of all, when you go to eat, do you bless your food or do you have fear of food? That's really important, okay? because I've seen, because we have to know, you know, that the body is a servant of the mind. I'm really all about low glycemic. That means low sugar or no sugar except for maybe a little, you know, stevia or lohan or erythritol or dates or a little maple syrup. But that doesn't mean a lot of it. You know, we have gotten to where we crave sugar all the time because we're used to it. And it's one of the taste buds that I think that are the last to go. So I see elderly people always crave sugar.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't taste much of.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And sugar gives them that instant energy. And their brains, if they have brain fog, it'll give them a minute, but it's not what their brain needs. Their brain needs good fat and lots of water. So, first of all, we're a dehydrated nation. We drink very terrible, terrible water. We're mineral deficient, and we're also extremely acidic. So we need to start looking at cutting back on animal products, dairy, sugar, all the things that make us very acidic. I always say you're not lactose intolerant. You're just not a baby cow.
Right.
You know, in reality, think about it. And then they go, but I drink organic raw. Yeah, but that cow still has hormones. And that milk was meant to make a little cow into a big fat cow. So,
right.
Now, we don't really need the dairy. Dairy also feeds tumors. It's the insulin growth factor in it. I didn't know that. Yeah, so it's very, you know, it feeds tumors. Good movie that has that on there is the China Study. You can read about that in that book. And I really think we've got to start getting back to organic, real food. That means you got to take some time to make your meal. Honestly, cooking is a lost art. And I can't believe it because it was some of my fondest times was sitting down to a homemade dinner as a kid. Even when I was in my 20s, we still cooked for each other. You know, friends came over. You know, back then, it's going to date me, but we all had two separate dishes, China and every day. You know, even in the 80s and 90s, we had two sets of China, you know, two sets of dishes because we actually gave parties and cooked. And
right.
Fun with our friends. Nobody does that anymore. Everything is everybody's in a hurry. And honestly, it doesn't take that long to cook a good, healthy meal. If you're eating a vegetable-based, fresh food, I mean, you know, you can really get it done fast. So for me, it's organic. We have to get away from the GMOs and eating out. So people will go out to eat and they'll go, but I just had a salad. Well, where did you eat? Well, all that salad you ate had lots of genetically modified vegetables, which means you also just got a bunch of synthetic estrogen and you just helped get your own DNA. So you see, we all think we're doing good just by eating salads, not if you're going to the wrong restaurants. I work 2 days a week at a raw food restaurant here in Florida, and it's called Rock Star, R-A-W-K, Star Cafe, and they are so picky. There is nothing, not one thing, not a spice or anything that is not completely organic. They will not compromise. They don't bring it in. If it's not organic, it doesn't go in their food. It doesn't go on their shelf. And it's amazing because they're that much of a purist. So every time you're there, and they've kept their prices really low, and you're eating real fresh food. And
Venus, I want to interrupt you for just a moment because I got an email from someone who is listening, and I want to thank him. He said to, going along with the discussion, watch Sugar Coated on Netflix. And it goes deep into the study how sugar causes cancer.
Oh, it does.
You know,
it's cancer's favorite food.
Mm-hmm.
It just lights it up. It's the most acidic food out there on the planet, and it loves it. There's another movie called Fed Up that's all about sugar. So when you see on the back of a, he's so right. When you see on the back of a you know, your ingredient list, and it says 4 grams of sugar, 8 grams. 4 grams equals a teaspoon. So that's because that's how you know how many teaspoons of sugar are in that product.
Hmm. Okay.
And it does. It's cancer's favorite food. So I don't know who you are, but you're totally right. And before World War II, the average American ate maybe 40 pounds of sugar in a year. And and now it's up to 178 pounds a year.
Wow.
I know. So we mess with our insulin, our gluten, you know, it's just very sad. And it is cancer's favorite food. And the way you starve cancer is to not eat anything that has sugar in it. And that means
mm-hmm.
grain, anything that releases sugar into the bloodstream. So
that's if you have
yeah.
cancer.
Even if you don't have cancer, isn't the cure prevention? So let's eat low
right.
sugar diets. Yeah, because we want to
okay.
prevent. I always
but,
say
but
the
you
cure
eat,
is.
But you eat fruit, right?
Oh, yeah, I don't have cancer anymore. I'm never going to
right.
have cancer again. I do. I eat fruit, but remember, fruit has fiber in it that slows it down. It's a totally
right.
different sugar. Some people say you should never even eat fruit, but you know what? I'm sorry. Fruit is full of all kinds of wonderful things.
Right.
I don't eat a lot of it, but I love fruit.
Well, and you know what's really interesting? They talk about limiting your fruit if you're a diabetic, but the latest research that Dr. Greger, who was on this show,
mm-hmm.
posted, said that diabetics who eat a lot of fruit actually do better than diabetics who don't. So
yeah,
it must
I think
be because
fruit
of all
is
of the
God's
fiber.
Candy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you know
right.
the fiber and the minerals and the water in those in that fruit is so important. I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and I just think we've gotten out of control in the United States, and it's starting to happen in other countries too. It's not just the United States. You know, if you go over to Asia now, there's lots of fast food restaurants. It's happening everywhere, but. Why have we gotten away? Why has fruit become bad when it's a natural thing that is from the earth and it has so many wonderful antioxidants and fibers and different, you know, carotenoids and phytonutrients and micronutrients, just like vegetables,
mm-hmm.
you know? But it's better, let's just eat a steak and not the fruit. I don't,
right.
You know? yeah. It doesn't
yeah.
it doesn't even make sense to me. I agree. Fruit is not
mm-hmm.
the enemy.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what about meat?
Well, this is now you're talking to a vegan. So,
yes. I know.
I was a vegetarian and vegan on and off during my 20s and 30s. I did it always for compassion reasons, not the health reason, because, you know, I didn't really know. And back then, I got to tell you, some of the things we were eating were not healthy.
Right.
But they had no animals. They were no animals. Then when I got diagnosed, so then I bought into, oh, let's do the high protein, high fat. And then I ate for a couple of years lots of meat, lots of dairy. I got so acidic. My whole endocrine system went off. I ended up getting diagnosed with cancer. I'm not saying it's because of the meat, okay? But it didn't help. It perpetuated a situation. Then
mm-hmm.
I did it for my health, and then it became a compassionate issue again. I think that we have overdone everything. There was a time when man only ate very little meat. I mean, very little. You know, they didn't eat meat 3 times a day. Sometimes they just
right.
ate bread. You know, and
mm-hmm.
what they can find, and it's so acidic, and you don't, and a lot of it is acidic waste, and I don't care if it's grass-fed. This is my take on that. It's still an animal. It's still acidic. Yes, it may be a little better for the human body, but they still have to slaughter that animal, and you don't know where it goes, what slaughterhouse it goes to, and what the cruelty has done to that animal. You know, and as far as pork goes, pork was never meant to be eaten anyway. They don't even have a lymphatic system. They're dirty animals. They're amazing animals. I love pigs. I've had a pet one. They're fourth on the intelligence scale. But urine just runs. They have no way of eliminating their toxin, and they're very intelligent and very lovely. And we mistreat pigs worse than any other animal, and they're the most intelligent. And it's just so sad to me. And no, we don't have, you know, some, there are some people that don't know how to combine their foods and eat enough and take the right supplements. And vegans do need B12, but meat eaters need B12 now too, because you don't get it because it's meat. It's because the cows used to eat grass that was not fertilized and did not have Roundup on it, and then their body made the B12 from the grass, the soil, and then when you ate the meat, you got B12. But now meat eaters aren't eating that kind of meat anyway, so really they're low in B12 also. So I think there are people that sometimes do have to eat some eggs and may have to eat some other things because they don't know how to eat correctly, and may have to have a little fish here and there, you know. But everybody's dietary needs are different. But to me, eating animals every day, all the time, is unnecessary. And that's my view, and I'm very healthy, and I get healthier and healthier every year. But I really pay attention to what I eat.
Yeah. Well, there has been some research that that meat is connected with colon cancer because it stays in your colon for a couple of days.
Oh, sometimes 5 days. You know, the Americans are not the most regular people. I just did a cooking show, and I kept saying, we need to poop. That's why we're going to eat steak. It's high in fiber. We really need to poop. I mean, and meat also dehydrates you because it takes so much water to push it through the colon because there's no fiber in it. So if you're not eating enough fiber to push everything through, your body starts to take water out of your tissues to pull it through the colon.
Oh, wow.
So we have really got, you know, it's just... We've just become a people, all people. It's not just us. I'm saying the world has just become people of access. Everything has to be in excess, not excess.
Yeah, excess. You're right. And what you were saying before, about meat, it's so true. When I was a kid, we didn't eat meat every day. And it wasn't because we knew anything bad about meat. We ate it in smaller portions, and it was a special thing to eat meat. We did not have it every day, and we certainly didn't have it at every meal. And the incidence of cancer was a lot lower back then.
It was, and I remember my mother could feed a family of four on one can of tuna. She would add things to the tuna and make four sandwiches.
Right.
You know, now it's a can of tuna per person. You know, it's not a 3-ounce steak. It's a 16-ounce steak. You know, and I just wanted to live a kinder life. And in my cookbook, I said, why did I write this book? Because I wanted to eat a kind life. I wanted to do things. You know, when you eat that meat, you're still eating beer. You know, we're not the Indians out there shooting our food and praying over. It's just a whole different world. And
So the animals are producing all those stress hormones when they're being slaughtered and we're eating them.
What they're doing in the slaughterhouses, everybody's trying to save money. Sometimes they don't even stun those cows. They just pull them up by their back feet. Can you imagine that poor little animal? That poor big animal, what that does to his body, and just getting them there. And there's just no need for it. You know, I just don't believe that we need to just on purpose go out and hurt so many things, and especially animals. They're very innocent. And to me, it's just not necessary. So that's my take on it. It's also they're very acidic. They're hard to digest. Most people don't even have digestive enzymes running through their body anymore. And, you know, there's lots of ways. I work with a company that We have a, it's called Perfect Amino. It's on my website. If anybody's interested, it's completely vegan. It's a aminos, the ones that our body doesn't make, and it's 99% absorbed. And it is a vegan source made in a lab. It's 99% bioavailable. Now, I take a lot of those because we need to keep our amino profile up. It's not protein we're lacking in, it's aminos. And for instance, you only absorb 32% from meat, and the rest of it is acidic waste. So for me, I'll just take the aminos, and they're amazing. They work on the whole body, even your endocrine system. So there are
Venus, if people go to your website, do they you have all the different products that you recommend?
Yeah, it's in my shop. If you go to venusdemarco.org, it says shop. There's a link that says shop my favorites. I was hoping my new website would be up, but it isn't up yet. But it will be. But on shop my favorites, you can see different links to different products. My blog, I have a blog on the amino acids. I think it's probably three down, four down. But it's called Perfect Aminos. And why you take it. There's even some videos on it. It's just a very important thing that I think, personally, I believe everybody should be on these, and especially vegans and, well, just everybody, because you're not absorbing all that, those aminos that you think you are anyway. They do find that people who are diagnosed with cancer are amino deficient. And so they cannot utilize their aminos, and they need to get their amino panel up. So it's very important. Again, we're talking prevention, right? Let's prevent. Let's live a healthy, calm. Let's take some time for ourselves. Let's, you know, cook food again or make raw food and sleep and love people and forgive people because nobody's perfect. Forgive yourself. And the sugar out of your diet, please. You don't need sugar in your coffee and sugar in this and sugar in that. And now they even coat our sugar with seashells like a chitosan, you know, to make it last longer. So even sugar has seashells in it sometimes. I mean, you guys, it's crazy. What did they do to our food? You can't even, you guys, when I first saw vegan sugar, I'm like, well, isn't sugar vegan? Well, then I found out not anymore.
Oh, wow.
I know.
So Venus, we're just about out of time. Time goes by really fast.
No, I want 2 hours. No.
But I want to make sure you let everybody know your book, which tells your whole story, is on your website, and
yes,
your cookbook with all your great recipes.
Yes. My Fearless is a paperback, and it's on my website, and it gives you all the links that you can buy. It's even in Kindle. Then my cookbook right now is a download. It's a PDF. It's called My Healing Kitchen. And you can buy it in a PDF form. Please read the instructions on how to download it once you pay for it. It has over 84 vegan recipes. Some are raw, some are cooked. They're very easy. And I think food is just very, very important. This is not, every recipe is not the recipes that I use to heal of cancer. These are all recipes that are good, that are healthy for you. A lot of them I did use through the healing part, but it's all vegan. And it's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into that cookbook. But the other cookbook, the other book, Fearless, definitely was blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah, it's a great book. I recommend it. And everything and your blogs and everything else is at venusdemarco.org, right?
Yes, everything's in one place, yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Venus. You have to come back soon and follow up because there's so much to talk about.
I know. I love talking to you, Mara.
I love a big
hug for me.
Same here. Hugging you too, Venus. Thank you so much for being on this evening.
All right. We'll talk soon. Bye.
All right. Bye. Have a good night. All right. So I'm going to go, I'm not going to take a break right now. I'm going to go right into the next segment. I'm going to be talking about how to keep from becoming depressed with all of the bad news that we keep hearing on the internet and social media and on television. But before we go to that, let me just fill you in on news. I say it every week, but it's true. Every week we get closer and closer. We do another step getting our videos up onto Roku. We now are on Vimeo, and you can actually subscribe to the videos that we have. They're the interviews that we have done in person with the guests that are here in Austin since the start of this year. And I will let you know how you can subscribe to those and also how you can access them on Roku when that's available. Also, my latest blog that came out a few weeks ago was similar to, on the same topic of what Venus was just talking about, and it's called Food for the Soul, about some tips for making some lifestyle changes with food, how to do it. And the new blog has already been submitted to Huffington Post. It should be published very soon. And I think you'll enjoy that one. That one is on stress. And stay tuned for more news coming up soon. All right, so now I'm going to talk about preventing depression. In this time of all this bad news coming at us constantly. So it seems like, you know, in these times we have of 24-hour news coverage and our frequent use of social media, it feels like we're being bombarded constantly with bad news. Almost every day when we turn on the news or we fire up our computer or our smartphone, there's a report of some breaking news of the negative type. And as Venus mentioned, we often sleep with our smartphones right next to our heads. So it's the first thing that we see when we get up in the morning. We look at Facebook or whatever social media you may have, and there it is, the bad news of the day, what happened during the night. And the bad news just seems to be happening more frequently and more intensely. And with the technology that we have at our fingertips, the information just is conveyed with greater detail, and often it's in real time. We end up watching these events while they're happening. A lot of the recent events that have occurred that are tragic, we've actually watched them as they were occurring. And in watching these events unfold or being told about them, soon after they occur on almost a daily basis, we often feel a sense of hopelessness and helplessness, and as well as fear. We worry that these kind of violent events will be hitting close to home, affecting us personally or affecting our loved ones. And the truth is that these fears are not unfounded. They do happen to people closer and closer to us. We see things happening to our neighbors on the news. However, the effects of constantly dwelling on these fears is that we get ourselves sick and we don't become part of the solution because we're too sick. And, you know, I'm someone who believes that knowledge is power. That's why I have this program. I think it's really important for people to know what's happening to our neighbors and our global neighbors. We're all connected, and things won't get better if we don't all work at solutions to all the different problems going on. And we need to know what's going on in order to work on them. Being a compassionate person and finding ways to be part of the solution do involve having accurate information about what's happening. And not all of the information that we get is accurate, that's for sure. But similar to being a caregiver for a loved one who's in need, you know, my advice in some ways is similar to the advice that I give to caregivers. And we need to take breaks or we won't be able to give anything, and we won't be able to be part of the solution. As I said, we'll be too sick, we'll be too burnt out. There comes a tipping point where our anger becomes part of the very problem that we hoped to resolve. We can actually develop what is called compassion fatigue, which will eventually lead to burnout and or depression from this constant bombardment of bad news and our addiction to it. Not only are we bombarded with the information, but we willingly keep our television set on the news all day long very often, and we constantly check our Facebook for new posts about what's going on. So it's on both ends. That they're sending out the information, but we're receiving it willingly. And this constant bombardment leads to this compassion fatigue. And compassion fatigue is caused by constantly hearing about or watching traumatic events directly affecting others. And it has the symptoms of emotional fatigue. Our emotions become numb, so that we start to notice that we don't have as much compassion with each new event. It becomes kind of run-of-the-mill when we hear about mass shootings and all sorts of tragic things. And it can lead to unremitting sadness or anger, and our lack of ability to enjoy our own life, and even physical symptoms of pain, fatigue, social withdrawal. And as Venus was talking about, you know, it's all about the immune system, and having this compassion fatigue can lead to a lowered immune system, which can lead to more common, you know, instance of the common cold or even something like cancer. And compassion fatigue, if it continues, can then lead to actual health issues or to burnout, like I said. And burnout consists of total mental exhaustion, physical exhaustion, and depression. Obviously, once we get to this state, we're totally helpless to ourselves and to other people. So we can't even be... we can't do anything to help the situation, and we only add more tragedy to it. Of course, when we hear about these tragic events and we feel sad and angry, and these emotions are healthy and rational, but the difference between healthy emotions and depression is that depression is pervasive, and it prevents us from being able to feel joy even when there's good news. And it leads to an overall numbing of emotions. So the question is, how do we find balance where we feel a healthy amount of sadness and anger when we hear about the events, but do not become overwhelmed or develop a fatigue of our compassion or burnout or depression? So first thing is feel what you feel. So as a psychotherapist and author, Dr. Dave Ricco, pointed out when he was on this program a few weeks ago, in reminding us what the spiritual masters have been telling us for centuries, and that is that pain is a given part of life. It's something that we cannot change. We cannot completely get rid of pain. It's always a part of life that there's pain. And it's something that happens. This is something that happens to everyone. However, if we try to numb ourselves from pain, we end up numbing ourselves from positive emotions as well, because we can't pick and choose which emotions to numb and which to feel. It's all or nothing. And if we allow ourselves to experience the sadness, then the intensity will eventually decrease. And we can then feel positive emotions and work at finding solutions, if there are any solutions. It's important to not try to live in a bubble and, you know, avoid all pain, and to allow ourselves to feel sad and to grieve. so that we then feel the desire to feel part of the, to be part of the solution, but not to become overwhelmed by it. So how do we do that? The second part is to take a break from the bad news to find to balance it by finding good news. And there has always been bad news in the world. We need to realize that. There always will be bad news. We're just more able to hear about it and even see it play out more and more in more detail through our technology. But there's also good news. And we don't hear very much about that good news because it really doesn't sell very well. So news sources tend to focus on the bad news. So it's really up to us to try to find the good news and realize that there is a balance. So take breaks from the bad news and the media and the social media. As I said, it can become addictive. Watching the same reports over and over again really don't help the situation and only create more feelings of despair within us. And keep in mind that the nature of life is that there is always dark and light, yin and yang, ebb and flow, up and down. And it's up to us to choose to ride these waves as smoothly as possible by accepting that this is what life is about instead of resisting them and letting ourselves feel like we're drowning. But we have to find that balance. We have to make that balance, because if we just watch the news all day, it won't be balanced. It'll be all negative. So we have to look for balance. And then we need to be grateful for the positives that are in our life and in our world. So we need to be grateful for that good news. And this can be very powerful in helping us to keep our equilibrium. We need to focus attention, take time to focus attention on what we feel thankful for, no matter how small that thing might be compared to all of the negativity. And this will really change our perspective about what's going on in the world and even change our reality. If we're grateful, it expands what we feel grateful for. And there's actually been research to show, Dr. Robert Emmons, who's a professor of psychology and researcher at the University of California, Davis, has done extensive research on the area of the effects of gratitude on our emotional and physical well-being. And his overall finding has been that gratitude is what gives life meaning. And among his findings was that people who kept gratitude journals, which is what, if you ever watch Oprah, that's what she always talks about, these people felt physically healthier and had a more optimistic attitude. So having gratitude is something that we need to cultivate, and it helps us to balance all of this bad news. And when we're more balanced, we're able to actually be part of the solution for all of this bad news. And then I recommend socializing with people. You know, when we isolate ourselves and just watch news all day long and get on Facebook and look at all of the negative things that people are posting, it can lead to depression, especially if we're already feeling depressed and stressed out. So forcing ourselves to be around people can help to break this cycle. And, you know, in terms of dealing with the bad news that's happening in the world, focus on developing relationships with people who you trust, who you feel that you can talk about how you feel about what's going on in the news, and you know that you won't be attacked for it. Being able to share your feelings about what's happening can really help to put things into perspective, and that can give you something else to be grateful for. And then, you know, as with my advice for anyone wanting to prevent depression in general and also more specifically for caregivers, I similarly recommend it to you when you're dealing with all of the bad news on television and social media, and that is it's really important to not only take breaks from the news, but to find ways to relax. So when we watch the news, we're constantly experiencing the stress response where we feel like something urgent needs to be done and we feel that fight or flight response. And constantly being in the fight or flight response with the adrenaline and epinephrine, norepinephrine, cortisol being produced, can actually lead to depression, anxiety, and damage to just about every organ of our body. So practicing, having a practice to induce the relaxation response can be very protective of ourselves and our body and our emotional state of mind. So taking time to find peace within ourselves can really decrease the risk for becoming depressed. So you might want to learn how to meditate or do slow breathing, get a massage, do some yoga, or any other form of relaxation that feels right to you, that gives you that break. And exercising is also a way of releasing those stress hormones that we produce when we're in that stress response. So it gets rid of the adrenaline, the extra adrenaline, and it creates those happy chemicals, the endorphins. Another added perk to exercising regularly is that it's been found that when you exercise several times a week, it actually increases your immune system so that it decreases your chances of even catching the common cold. And as we just spoke with Venus about, a lowered immune system can lead to even much more serious situations like cancer. So choose an exercise that you enjoy so that you know that you'll do it. And then getting out in nature can be one of the most powerful ways of shifting our mood, of lifting our mood, and calming us down when we're feeling anxious or stressed out, and it really gives us a better perspective of the world that we're in. When we feel the peace of the earth around us, it really helps us to connect to the peace within us, and it helps us to see that there really is positive in the world. It's not all negative like we see on the news, so it helps us to find that balance. And if you're not able to get outside, the research actually has shown that for people who can't get outside, even looking outside a window at nature or looking at a photograph has some of the same benefits of being out in nature. And, of course, laughing regularly, I always talk about that. Laughing every day is really, really powerful for keeping us from becoming depressed and keeping us healthy. And you might ask, how it's possible to laugh when things seem so grim in the world. And I believe that it was Abraham Lincoln who said in the middle of the Civil War that laughing, I don't have the exact quote here in front of me, but that in times like these, in dark times, it's even more important to laugh. All right. So there are a couple more tips for keeping from becoming depressed during these times when we're constantly watching tragedy on the news. But I'm going to save that. So be sure to tune in next week, and I will continue with those tips. So for right now, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, veteran First Sergeant Will Williams will be joining us once again. And this time, we'll be talking about developing better relationships between police and the communities that they work in. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in about 1 minute.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpell is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpell, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show. Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpell.com.
And we are back. We're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And now joining us on the phone is someone who has made it his life mission to be part of the solution. Our friend who's been on the show many times, Veteran First Sergeant Will Williams, joins us. Good evening, Will.
Good evening, Doc. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Well, before we get started, I want to say that my prayers go out to everybody who has lost somebody, all the families, in the past couple of weeks.
Yes, I wish there was.
I wish there was more that I could say, but just everybody know that my prayers are with you.
Yeah, it's been a rough couple of weeks, and that's why I felt like I needed to talk about how to keep from becoming depressed. But I think one of the ways to keep from becoming depressed is to be part of the solution. And I know
it
that
is.
you always make a really big effort to be part of the solution, and you do a good job at it.
Well, you know, I try really, really hard, Doc, and I want to tell everybody that I promise you that I will be very PC today. Most people that know me know that I am not very PC. So I'm gonna try my best. There's a couple of people, a lot of people that's listening tonight, and I want to thank them for listening. I want to talk about my relationship that I have with so many different police in the area. And I just want everybody to know this is my opinion. I'm in a lot of organizations. This is not any organization's opinion. This is my own. And talking about the solution, I think that I won't say it's going to solve everything, but I have an organization, Share the Will, and myself and some board members have been talking today, and I think we have something that would help with some of the solutions. And I don't know, maybe not. We'll put it out and see what people think about it.
Great.
But I want to talk about my relationship with Round Rock, Sheriff's Department, Williamson County, state troopers, some of my personal relationships. I'll give you a good example. I moved in Round Rock 15 years ago. A young officer named Joseph Claypool approached me, and we have established a relationship for over the past 15 years. He comes to my house. We, you know, we have coffee. We talk about what's going on in the community. A couple of years ago, a gentleman that was going to run for sheriff, who is now the newly elected sheriff of Williamson County, Bob DeShody, contacted me, and it was about veterans and getting involved. And since then, we have worked with kids with cancer and, you know, just so many things in the community. Georgetown Police Department, who I have very little to do with and don't know, but has also contacted me, and we have worked on the homeless, helping homeless. I mean, of every race. And, I mean, if you're out there and you just get to meet them, you know them, Chief Banks, our Round Rock Police Chief, has set up a reading program at the schools. You know, you'll see so many different police officers. Mike Billy, who is a constable, he comes out and helps feed the homeless. We got Vinnie Sharon, who is the new constable of Williamson County, who is just active in the community, who comes out, helps with Christmas toys, helps pass out Christmas gifts and toys to the kids at Dell Children's Hospital. I mean, they're all involved. our police officers come in the neighborhood, give kids rides in their police cars. We have a walk to feed the homeless, and we call it Hike for Hunger. And we have police officers, we have all first responders, we have citizens all walking together. And this is a community thing. If the communities, you know, reach out, the police will reach back to you. You know, invite them to your church. Invite them to your park. Get to know them. I mean, they're just waiting for the invitation.
Yeah, you and I had a discussion about this yesterday, and we've been talking all through the week about, you know, obviously the things that we see on the news are not all positive, right? There are some police that are not so great. But they're not the majority, right?
Well, you know, Doc, that's of everybody, every group that you have. There's gonna be a few bad ones, but we, you know, and what happens, I think, and I'm sure a lot of veterans out there can understand what I'm talking about. A lot of non-veterans are gonna understand what I'm talking about. When we came back from Vietnam, a lot of people called veterans baby killers. For what the wrong that a few had done. Now they realize the veterans that came back from Vietnam was not baby killers, they were heroes. But when they came back, they were spit on, they were called baby killers. And now we're doing, I should say we, a small portion of people is doing the same thing to the police department. There's a few bad ones, but now certain people have labeled everybody bad police officers. And we're doing the exact same thing.
Right. And I agree. And I I'm very sad about the police officers who have been killed. And, you know, I know that it's terrible. You know, all life is important. But I think what's really gets to people, I guess, is that the few, you know, the minority of police who aren't so good do a lot of damage, right?
Oh yeah, and you know, they do some damage, and we do some damage ourselves. What happens is, let me explain that. What happens is, perfect example. What happened today? Okay, people that wants the attention, wants the division. They will find one or two people who has mental problems or have anger problems, and they get them all fired up. And then they sit them out on these missions, but you don't see them around. And it don't take a genius to figure out what's going on. I am not, you know, highly educated, but I can tell what's going on. A few people will find this right person. And we all know it's easy to find that person. We sit them up. We get them all hyped up. Well, you know, this shouldn't happen, and this is what we can do. And they say we, but they don't show up. They don't even identify this stuff. They're cowards. And yes, ma'am, I shouldn't have said it, but I said it. They are cowards. Because when you set somebody else up to do your dirty work, I mean, that's it.
But the question is, Will, what can the majority of the police, the good police officers, and the citizens of the communities do to prevent the violence between police and community members, both ways, right? The police sometimes are overly brutal and overreacting and shooting people where they might have done something a little less fatal,
you know,
and the other way where, you know, citizens get so angry and they go after them and shoot them.
Well, you know, the first step is community relations. That is the first step.
Right.
If this community relations, I think that would ease a lot of tension. Second step is, you know, we blame citizens, we blame the police, but it all falls back to our government. And no particular government, I'm not talking about any particular party. What happens is the police are underfunded. You know, police love training, just like the military. They love training. And, you know, we talk about people with mental issues. Well, you know, they need money to do the funding. If they don't have the money, you know, it's not just up to the cities of the states. I mean, they need funding. They're underfunded. They don't have enough police officers. You know, they don't get the money for training, like mental
mm-hmm.
training. You know, we have a lot of veterans that come back with PTSD. You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't get the training for that. You know, it's there's a lot of different things to make
right.
this work.
And right, and particular... I think you and I, go on.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I get on the road.
No, you and...
I'm very...
well, you and I were talking about it yesterday, about how, you know, if somebody is more trained, they're less likely to pull the trigger because, you know, they're not scared by situations.
Well, you know, it's very easy for us, and when I say us, I'm myself included, to sit on my couch and judge somebody when they pull the trigger. We're not the ones standing there wondering if we're going to get shot or not. And then on the other side, we're not a young person who hear every day, you know, this police officer is going to shoot you and make the wrong move. I call upon this. During the Civil Rights Movement, the leaders of the Civil Rights Movement was men of God. Our churches was there. And I call upon our men of God now to take a step forward. And I know everybody, every minister, every deacon, every man of God is in the church right now preaching the word and talking about this is wrong. But we need to take one more step. We need to go out in the community. And we need to sit down and we need to talk with our young people. Young people are very, very, what's the word? They need something to believe in. They need a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And they need people my age to go out in the community and sit down and talk with these young people and stir them in the cause. Now, the young
mm-hmm.
people want to do something. And I think, you know, I don't know what they think about it, but my organization has came up with an idea to help the police, to help them get funded. If we all sit down, just think, if there's 1,000 people in a surrounding area, and not just people of color, but all people, just 1,000, and we know there's 20 times more than that in the surrounding area. But if 1,000 people would sit down, send a note to the congressman asking for more training, asking for more money for the police, that's 1,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you,
mm-hmm.
a politician will move for 1,000 votes.
Right.
And that's
right.
only 1,000. Think how many more. If we all work together, if we all come together, you know, blocking the road is not the answer. Look how many people accidentally get run over on 35. If you go out, and I'm saying you, I shouldn't say you, but if we go out and stand on 35 and, you know, people are late for work already, you know, they're already rushing. And then when you start talking about holding people up from going to work, you're talking about their paychecks. You're talking about their families. Then pretty soon, somebody's going to run over one of these kids standing on 35, and then you got a whole nother issue that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're just developing problem after problem after problem. You know, if we boycott some of the stores, what good is that going to do? If we boycott some of the stores, you know, we got people working, the hours are going to be cut. Then you start talking about another issue, taking food off people's tables. And if there's a man working two jobs and somebody's trying to stop him from going to that second job, and he's trying to pay his bills, put his kids through school, he's going to get pretty upset. And then
mm-hmm.
he's got another issue. So then everybody's mad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we just sit down and talk about it, I mean, nobody has to agree with everything. I mean, now I consider you one of my best friends, and we're not going to agree on everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way it is.
Right, we agree to disagree.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we try to listen to each other. I think that's even more important, and listen and see if we can learn something.
Yes, and if we work together, because, you know, sometimes I might have an idea and you have a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, my pride might get in the way that minute, but later on I start thinking about it and I start thinking, well, that was better than my idea.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's a lot of the problem here is pride.
Yeah. Well, I think you brought up some good points, the community involvement, because let's go back to that for a moment. We have about a minute more, but I just want to highlight that, because when police are involved in the communities in which they work, even if they don't live in those same communities, which is often the case in bigger cities, right? In small towns, they live in the town, but in big cities, they tend to not be the neighbors of the people that they're protecting. But when they get involved in those communities, it humanizes the people in the communities. So it's, you get to know the people, and you don't, you know, you tend to have a different attitude. You're not as fearful. Your adrenaline isn't pumping when you're walking through that neighborhood. And the people in the community get to know you, so they feel more comfortable and don't expect you to, you know, to shoot them.
Exactly. And, you know, the gentleman I was talking about, Officer Claypool, he lives an hour away from Round Rock. But when he's in Round Rock on his off-duty time, he makes sure he calls, he says hello. Or if he sees me walking down the street Round Rock, he stops, talks to me. We have a cup of coffee. I mean, it's just getting to know each other.
It's,
that's all.
It's important. But, Will, I just got the message that we need to break here. So,
Okay.
Let me put that website, let's say that website again so people can,
share
can
the
hear
will.
It. ShareTheWill.com?
Yes, ma'am. And next week we will have a letter up, and if people would like to endorse the letter, that would be great. And if we get enough endorsements, we'll just send it forward to our congressmen, you know, to our senators. We'll send it forward. And if they don't want to sit down and draft up a letter, we will draft up a letter for them, because
we need to work
with our police department and get them the funding.
So Will, this is a really important conversation. So maybe you can come back on sometime and we can continue it.
Yes, ma'am. And if there's a neighborhood in the surrounding areas that want to get to meet their police departments and they don't know how, can't reach out, if they call me, I'd be happy to reach out for them.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Will. Well, thank you very much.
Well,
thank
you.
Coming on the show. And let's do this again soon.
Yes, ma'am, we will.
All right. Okay. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take a very quick break, 1 minute, and when we come back, we're going to talk about filmmakers, Where is the Horse? So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show. Please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpel.com.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live in a podcast at drmaracarpel.com. And now joining us on the phone from Monterrey, Mexico, we have Where is the Horse? Filmmaker.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Dr. No and Marisol?
Yes, it is.
Hello.
Pleasure to be with you.
Just to let you know, when we talk like this, there's a slight delay. Welcome to the program. Maybe you can talk a little bit about Where is the Horse?
Of course, yes. Where is the Horse is actually Dr. Nurso, like us, that decided to dream enough to be able to fulfill a big project that we set up together for one full year, and decided to just raise the sails and go for a big trip, a big journey around the world without taking a plane, doing documentaries about people that inspires us on the way, that take part of a change, a positive change on this planet. And, sharing the amazing stories on our website and with all the medias, like the social medias on the web. And, just bring a little uplifting sprinkle in the web, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. We need an uplifting sprinkle in the web.
I feel like, Where is the Horse? Like, the name comes from this transit when the horse carriage, actually, we had, in Montreal, the horse carriage was just, I think, expired, and we transit to the electric tramway in the streets of Montreal. And the people, when they would see the wagon go from itself without the horse, they were just like, they could not understand how it would go on itself, so they were looking for the horse, like, where is the horse, looking underneath the and so for us, Where is the Horse is taking a step back to look and re-questioning the way we live our life, and maybe bring a little more of that horse, like go more to the basics, go seek to the essential of what it means to be a human on Earth, and just look for the horse. The horse can take many, many aspects in life, and we're just sharing what could mean to look for that horse. Depending on where you live on Earth, pretty much.
Okay. So. Mm-hmm. I understand that you guys were on South Padre Island. In fact, I think you were at our party, our birthday party, but I never got to meet you. because you were doing a documentary on Lucinda Waringa, Sandy Feet.
Yes, exactly.
She's our friend. She's been on this program many times. And So did you have a film festival already at her Sandbox Inn?
Yeah, we did. Actually, that was our premiere, the premiere of the Where is the Horse Film Festival. Yeah, we did, and she was very, very kind, actually, to open her backyard to let us do our premiere. We received movies from, I don't know if you know, Joel Moulton.
Uh-huh.
That is very, his good friend of Lucinda, too. And so we had their film and Lucinda's, too, and we also screened movies from around the world. We have a social selection that people submit their movie to our festival, and we're just programming nomadic film festival along the road around the world. So at some point we'll be on a sailboat and we'll screen our festival on the sail of our boat from marina to marinas, and we have everything we need. Like, we carry our projector and the screen and travel with it, and when we leave a place, that's when we do the film festival, after we've met some few people and we have just a small crowd enough to make the festival happen. Yeah.
Oh, very nice. So whenever you leave a place, you show your film?
Yes,
very
exactly.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. And we invite,
so where have...
Sorry.
Is that?
No, you go.
So
sorry.
So where have you been so far?
We left from Rivière-du-Loup, Quebec, Canada, the 18th, I think, of May. Mm-hmm. And so far, because we left from three of our friends, actually. They've been paddling from Canada to, well, now they're in Mexico, so they've been paddling with their kayaks all the east coast of America.
Wow.
Going to Yucatan. So they called us and said, hey, Marisol, would you like to film our crossing from the States to Mexico? And Dr. Noah and I were like, yeah, let's just do it. And so we decided to leave like 6 months in advance we were supposed to. So we did the east coast of United States and went filming their crossing, and we said goodbye to them. We went to Monterrey. We went also to Tuxpan in Mexico. It's in Veracruz. And now we are back to Monterrey because we went for 10 days meditation. It's a retreat in the desert, meditation center. And we just came out of 10 days of meditating. Yeah.
Very
so
nice.
Now, yeah, we're programming to do lots of climbing in the next few weeks. And also, we just met an interesting man. He's 30 years old, and 7 years ago, he had a big accident, and he almost died from his accident. Mm-hmm. But then him facing death made him to rethink his whole life. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to quit university, and he bought himself a land in the mountain where there's a nice creek flowing through his land. And he's self-sufficient. He's just been doing so well. And so that's our next movie that we're going to make.
Yes.
About his very inspiring, just the way he thinks and the way he sees life and how he expresses it in day-to-day life is just so inspiring. So we decided that we're going to make our next movie on him. Yeah.
And where is he? What part of the world?
He lives, yeah, it's Real de Catorce in Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah, he's very like he has no neighbors. There's nowhere like you cannot even go by car. It's 45 minutes walk in the mountain. Very how do you say?
In retreat.
Yeah,
isolated.
Isolated.
Yes, but at the same time,
mm-hmm.
he's autosufficient. Like, he grows his own crops, and he has this very spiritual way of, like, in everything he does. But it's actually quite an interesting story, because he started, after his near-death experience, he started having these visions, and, you know, like, at some point he thought, well, am I going crazy, or what's going on with me? So he started seeking, like, shamanic experiences and seeking, like, healing, and, like, instead of just going to, I don't know,
the medicines and pills.
Yeah, the pills,
yeah.
The pharmacology, which we use mainly in Northern America to treat, like, sometimes people who have these
mm-hmm.
visions, or we call that, sometimes it's, like, called mental illness, but that's another
right.
subject. But, anyway, he went for that other alternative to go just towards like a natural healing with plants and shamans and all that kind of stuff.
And now he's doing good.
Yeah, and now he's really well, and he just lives in that, you know, kind of old style way, and he found like peace in that. So that's exactly how he like found his own path to heal himself.
Right. Now, I understand, Dr. No, that you're a psychologist.
Yes, yes. I'm not practicing currently, but I worked for the last 2 years as a psychotherapist in Quebec. Yeah.
Okay, okay. So you kind of have that perspective when you, you know, you find people living in, you know, in the ways that find them peace.
Yes, definitely. Definitely, it's an angle that we like to look at in like when we observe phenomena or when we encounter people. Thank you. Yes, sure.
And so after you film him, what part of the world are you going to next?
Well, that's a big question right now because the plan is to get a sailboat, so. We're thinking that Panama would be a good place to, you know, just stay there for a while and see how things work, how sailing is done over there, and maybe, like, I don't know, find a deal and get a sailboat.
In crusty Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so, to see what's going on that side, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I saw that some of your videos are uploaded, some of your documentaries. I watched the Lucinda Sandy Feet documentary and her Will You Marry Me documentary, which I have to tell you, she talks a lot about the Will You Marry Me sandcastles that she built, but that's the first time I actually watched it, and it was so touching. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, are there, you know... Are there ways that listeners can follow you and see some of the videos or of the documentaries that you do?
Of course, yes. Thank you to remind me. People can follow us very easily on Facebook, on Instagram, we are pretty much, if we're on YouTube, we have our channel, and it's all called Where is the Horse? And so we also work with a biologist that informs us on the natural world the biologic world, and help us to understand how to protect more. Sorry, we're in the street of Mexico. You might hear like and so there's also small interviews that are like with people that we meet in the road. So we share like 30 seconds of inspiring stories that they have to tell us. So anyway, so on YouTube, on Facebook, and Instagram, mostly.
Okay, great.
Oh, and whereisthehorse.com. There's a map online, so you can see where we're at and following, because all the videos are located on our road. So each dot that you see on the map, then it's a video that we did, and it's located exactly where we were when we did it. And there's a lot of information. most of the information are on the website, and from there you can relocate wherever. Yeah, and I invite also people to ask us questions about, I don't know, if they're wondering about how we travel, what we do with money, and how it is to live two people in a, like, very small place for a very long period of time. Yeah, we are very, like, we respond every questions that are asked to us, and we are really trying to, like, connect people together that are thinking maybe differently, or they think that, like, all kinds of people that have inspiring messages, so we invite people to get in touch with us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, and I'm going to post all of those contacts for you on my web post tonight. So
awesome.
So people can see that. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. This is really interesting. I'm going to have to follow you guys and watch what you're
awesome.
Doing. Very inspiring.
Thank you, Dr. Carpo.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. And have safe travels and great, inspiring times. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, you have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
You too. Okay,
right. Bye. Bye-bye. All right. So that was Where is the Horse? And I will be posting all their contact information on my web post later tonight. So be sure to check that out. And before we go off the air, I want to let you know what's coming up next week right here on Dr. Mara Carpel and Your Golden Years. Sunday, July 24th, we'll be back right here at 5 p.m. Central Time. Once again, writer, animal lover, and author of the novel Vegan Cowboy, The Scheme, and fresh off the presses, Madeline's masterpiece, Carol Tracy joins us from Northern California to talk about her latest book about women and relationships in middle age, which I think is a really good topic. And Laura Gelizunas will report in from the retirement paradise, Puerto Vallarta, and musician Pai Shun joins us, and more. And if you want to hear this evening's program again or read information from the show and get the link to all those contacts that we talked about, the website, go to my website, drmaracarpel.com, drmaracarpel.com. Also, follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Carpel, Your Golden Years. And you can hear this evening's program in as soon as 5 minutes from now by going directly to blogblogtalkradio.com. This evening's program was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by neurologist and memory specialist Dr. Ronald DeVere, by Sonia Das, the Bra Lady, and by Story House. And special thanks to my guests, Venus DeMarco, First Sergeant Will Williams, Where is the Horse, Dr. No, and Marisol. And, of course, thank you to Art, and thank you all for listening. And have a peaceful night and inspiring week. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone. Stay cool.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.